Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay, all right.
I feel wired.
Okay, can everybody hear? Can everybody hear okay? I want to get started by Amy talk to you a little bit about QSOS, Quilters Save Our Stories, and which is a project that we've been doing for over 10 years. And there's over 1,000 of these interviews on our website and archived at the Library of Congress. And I just want to talk about a misconception that I used to have. I was researching my book, The Quilters Catalog, for like 5 years, and I was looking for famous people to interview for the book, and I was using the QSOS interviews to help decide which teachers I wanted to put in my book. And I came away with the misperception that I think a lot of people have, and which I'm adding to today, that only famous people are interviewed. And so although we brought you here to hear an interview with Denise, please know that this is a project that is gathering the stories of all types of quilters, and if you have somebody you know who you think their story needs to be told, you can get involved in this project, and we hope that you will. So that's one of the major misconceptions. Also want to let you know that the way this is done is an exact transcription of what we say to each other will be, and all the other noises will be part of the transcription. So if we had a barking dog come through here, or a fire engine goes by or something, all of that is going to be on the recording. So we're going to have open it up when we are done with the formal interview to any questions that you have, but that is not for the transcription. So not that you have to hold your breath or anything, but just so you know, that's how it's going to be. As Amy said, you've got Kleenexes in your bags. I hope I don't make Denise cry, but it does happen. I was interviewing Carol Breyer Fallert at Quilt Festival last year, and I made her cry, and it really shocked me. I thought the one person I'll never make cry is Carol Fallert, and we were sitting on these really high stools, and I had no pockets and no tissues. And here I am again. I have no tissues. So somebody want to just throw up some tissues here? Here I am violating my cardinal rule here. So for sure I'm going to weep. I'm serious. I'm actually serious about this. Yes. Great. Thank you. And see, thank you, because we're so wired we can't move. Okay, rip that sucker open. Okay.
I have been very weepy lately, so you never know.
So the basic format of this is the quilter brings a touchstone quilt with them to talk about during the interview, and it's not like set in stone which questions you ask, but a lot of the questions that I'm using today are those that are on the quadrant questions on the website where all the directions are, and we have a certain format for starting and stopping, so nothing I've said so far is for the permanent record, but here we go. I'm Meg Cox. I'm here at the second annual Quilters Take Manhattan benefit. I'm interviewing Denise Schmidt for Quilters SOS Save Our Stories, the oral history project of the Quilt Alliance. We're sitting in front of a wonderful audience at the Fashion Institute of Technology on Saturday, September 15th, and the time is now 1:45 p.m. So thank you so much, Denise, for coming to do this. Can you tell me about the quilt that's behind us and why you brought this quilt today?
This quilt is called One Big Square, and when you asked me to bring a touchstone quilt, of course, it set off a whole flurry of, what does that mean? And I don't always keep most of the quilts that I make, so I knew that it had to be a quilt that I had around, too. But this is... This felt like a touchstone quilt to me, mainly because the block is made in an improvisational way, but to me it kind of represents, the fact that I used one block, one big block in a quilt and set it off center kind of said something about my approach to quilt making, just sort of taking, working off of traditional methods, but just thinking about it in a different way. And I made this quilt for an exhibition at a gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I just realized I forgot exactly what year, but I think it was maybe 2003 or something.
So it's typical of your process. So what about your technique and your colors and all
well,
that?
Well, I have a lot of, you know, I guess it's, I do a lot of different kinds of things. I design fabric, and I've designed quilts that have been manufactured in India. I design quilts that are, you know, specifically for gallery exhibitions that are, to me, more like making art. I make quilts that I sell to interior designers. So I kind of have a broad range of work that I do. I think my process might change slightly for each thing that I do, but this quilt, for example, was made for an exhibition, and so the process always starts with drawing. And actually, I did three quilts along a similar line for this particular exhibition, and they were based on sketches that I had been carrying around. I probably had done at least 5 years before and never had a chance to kind of figure out, but, you know, I thought, oh, you know, I want to do this, like, really intensely pieced square, you know, just that just is sort of attached to the side, and the rest of it's all white. So I knew, you know, that I had that sort of idea, but the process of getting from that drawing, the pencil drawing, to an actual finished quilt sometimes takes forever.
Now, was it machine-pieced, or...?
Yep, I pieced it by machine, and it has a lot of fabric. There was a great old fabric store in Bridgeport, Connecticut, where my studio is. That was one of those places that had the wall of buttons and the old cardboard little boxes, and everybody that worked in there kind of was bent over. And like so many of those places, it was going out of business, and so I went and bought as much of the dead stock. A lot of it was from the 70s. That really bold stripe was one of the fabrics. And for the exhibition in New Mexico, from the people that I was working with there, I had a sense of where they wanted me to go with the color, and I wanted to do really hot, kind of intense colors, but in very, you know, these small little focused areas. And that stripe was kind of a key fabric, and I also put that fabric in the bags when I teach workshops, and a lot of people pull it out, and I'm like, oh, I happen to like it a lot. But it's not for everyone.
Now, it's hand-quilted, I see.
It's hand-quilted, so it's machine-pieced. I pieced the square, and I don't remember if I put the whole top together. And then the quilting also in this whole series was, you know, what I usually do in this kind of process where I'm making one-of-a-kind quilts, I'll photograph the piece, the finished top, or even just, you know, the fabric pinned up on the wall. I'll photograph it, and then I print it out on an 8.5 by 11. Like, I always do everything kind of to scale. And then I'll draw over it with pencil to figure out how I want it to be quilted. So this whole series, the lines to me were kind of important in terms of, you know, that they kind of continued the piecing, but not exactly.
So you say that your quilts are, you don't keep all of them, and so where does this one live?
It's folded up in my storage area, sadly.
I want to talk a little bit about your background, and what is the age you were when you started quilting, and who got you started?
I came late to quilting. I grew up, my sister, who's 8 years older than I am, went to art school, and I remember going with her to drawing classes and stuff and sitting with my back turned to the life model.
So embarrassed.
But I think that early exposure to all the things that she was doing, you know, I feel really fortunate that I had that exposure to art, artists, photography, you know, sort of a different way of looking at the world. And I think that was pretty important in terms of how I look at things. And I always made things when I was growing up. I had a dollhouse, and I made little needlepoint rugs. I might have made a quilt for the dollhouse. I made curtains and all kinds of things, but I don't remember. It wasn't until I was in my 20s that I made my first quilt. And actually, it was before I went to RISD. I started messing around. I got really interested in crazy quilts and the whole embellishment thing. And I was taking a drawing class and incorporating kind of that feeling of, using pieces of fabric and stitchery to add to the drawings. And then it was when I was at Rodin School of Design, I started looking at historical quilts more. And then after I graduated and I moved to Connecticut, and I didn't have a network of friends there yet, and I was working as a graphic designer, and it was kind of a very mass market, mind-numbing job, and I became an expert in Barbie pink. And I was making a quilt for a friend, and it was a simple 9-patch. I got really interested in all the stories of quilt makers and how, whether how accurate it is or not, but that those stories of women coming together and the community and the whole barn raising idea, I was longing for my own community, and all my friends were kind of far away, and I think I kind of latched on to that idea of quilt making. Plus, at the time, I got really interested in old timey music like Appalachian string band music, and it had, to me, kind of had the same resonance of people coming together, rolling up. And you didn't have to be great at it. And I think the quilts that I kind of fell in love with, they weren't about matching corners and being precise. There was a beautiful kind of happenstance and accidental quality in some cases to them. And so I kind of fell in love with all of that. And then I was making a quilt as a gift for a friend. And I think having a tangible record of the amount of time that I spent hand quilting, here's 3 hours, as opposed to my graphic design work, which is, in many cases, very ephemeral. It's printed matter. I'm spending hours kerning the space between letters. No one ever notices. It's on a piece of paper that gets crumpled up and thrown away, versus this very tangible record of time that I had spent. And then that, it was also a lasting object, that was useful and beautiful. It had this graphic quality, it had a tactile and textural quality. Plus, the bits of fabric, I'm one of the youngest of four kids, and both my parents had careers, but they were very handy makers of things, and my mother sewed all our clothes, and I grew up in central Massachusetts, and we used to go to all the mill stores and stuff. So to me, the whole, collecting fabric was very connected to, my mom and being with her. And to make a quilt that sort of combined all of these things, to me, seemed really magical. And that was a long-winded
answer. No, that's a great answer. It's so interesting, all these different elements mm-hmm. that would exert this pull on you. But I think a lot of people who know you as an iconic designer and a wonderful designer and kind of a modernist would be interested to know some of your background, who you thought you were going to be, say, in your 20s. I knew you were a theater major, right? And then you were kind of a downtown art chick. I think not everybody knows that whole part of your life where you would. Now, if Mark Lipinski were here, he would say, Denise, tell the nice people about when you were photographed by Andy Warhol for Paris Vogue wearing very little. So I'm just inserting that for Mark.
We love Mark here.
Since
that
he's not here.
We would just avoid all of that altogether. Well, I think like any, I did a lot of different things through my 20s and 30s even, and I was just kind of figuring it out. I danced my whole life. That was always a part of my growing up, and when I went to college, I started working with this one choreographer, Carmen Beauchat, who was a part of the whole, she worked with, she was part of the Judson Church dance movement, so she was very connected with Twyla Tharp and Trisha Brown and all those people. And when I danced with her, we used to rehearse at Bob Rauschenberg's house. And so I had a kind of, not really intense, but peripheral sort of association with a lot of those people. And through, you know, I got involved in performance art and met these really cool people and did these strange performance things that had to do with costume and sometimes no costume. And it was this, these two people, Corey Tippin and Delia Doherty, and you know, they would make these fantastical things, and they were both, or Corey was part of the factory, or Andy Warhol's factory. So that's how that, you know, and I was just this 20-year-old kid, like, is that a guy or a girl? I don't know. So, and then that's just one thing led to another. What can I say?
Well, I think one of the things that interests me about your background, as I said, is pulling from so many different things. And I know as far as the dance thing, you even at one point were another sewing part of your life. You were at one point even sewing tutus for the Boston Ballet. I think a lot of people also don't know that for a while you considered that you might become, make your life designing fonts, being a, doing typography. And probably not a lot of people know that she did create a font. It's called Scamp, and it's still, people still use it, and you get the occasional royalty check, is that
correct? I do, at $30 or something like that occasionally, but yeah, I think I've, you know, and maybe what, you know, now I can say, well, I have this patchwork past, and it all kind of comes together, and but I have always felt that as disparate as all my experiences are, I mean, even designing a typeface is very... you know, I'm all about the details, and you know, have fine motor skills, and you know, designing a typeface. You know, there's the gestural kind of visual part, but then there's the technical aspect where you have to create all the, especially digitally, you have to create all the kerning pairs. You know, you have to. You know, somebody's determining every time you type a capital A and a lowercase E or whatever the letter combination, you know, like the thousands of combinations, somebody, you know, the designer usually is deciding how much space is between those letters. So it's very tedious, but I, you know, that's a answer is a part of who I am, too. Both my parents were engineers, and so I think I have, you know, both right brain, left brain, and certainly quilting, you know, answers both aspects of that. It's, there's, you know, the overall design and concept of it, but then there's, you know, executing it, and there's a lot of math involved, and, you know, it kind of satisfies both aspects. And you said some other things that I was going to talk about.
The tutus?
Oh, the tutus. So then I had, so I lived in New York for a while and did all this, you know, dance and performance things, and then I moved back to Massachusetts for a while, and I had a series of sewing jobs. I worked for a clothing designer in Worcester, Massachusetts. I did a season at the Boston Ballet and made, you know, like, sewed tutus, which is quite an experience. I worked at, and during this whole time, you know, it all sounds really interesting, but I was also trying to figure out what did I want to do with my life? You know, like, here I've gone to college, I've wasted my parents' money, you know, like, what is it I'm really trying to do, and it just, you know, took me a while to figure it out. I worked at a monastery making ecclesiastical vesture, which was really fascinating, and I just, you know, had a lot of interesting experiences. And then I went back to school and studied graphic design, which I think was a really good decision and gave me a lot of confidence in, you know, my own skills. I actually, when I graduated from Mercy, I designed the typeface, but I also took a class cutting letters in stone, and I got really interested in that, and it was also had this sort of, like, old-timey kind of feeling to it, and I was gonna set up shop and carve headstones. But then I got carpal tunnel, so that didn't end today.
So what was it, what event or series of events moved quilting to the center, and what did it take for you to say, this is my destiny, this is what I'm going to be doing?
Well, I don't know that I knew that at the time. I think it was, that's all those things that I talked about before, kind of working at this graphic design job that, I could make a good living with, but it wasn't that interesting. It wasn't sort of it wasn't ever really an expression of my ideas. And I think falling in love with the historical quilts and the everything about that, I knew some people who were in, who designed furniture for contemporary home furnishings, and they exhibited at this trade show called the International Contemporary Furniture Fair, and I went to that, and there were all these cool people, and so I started to have this idea that I wanted to make quilts that, because what I wanted to do, I loved these historical quilts, but at the time, when I looked around in the quilting world or in department stores or, at quilt shows, nobody was sort of referencing those quilts more kind of accurately or, in the simple spirit that I saw. And I felt that as a designer, if I was interested in those quilts, they had everything. They had pieces of fabric that reminded you of a dress that you had when you were a kid. They had design that looked like a modern painting. It was sewing, it was, had the sort of idea of people coming together in a quilting bee. It had like all those things. And it was very appealing to me, and I just thought, if I could tell that story to this design community who maybe doesn't think about quilts, and they have a misperception of it. So my goal was to kind of, pitch it out to the design world. And so I started exhibiting at this trade show and doing quilts. And it took a long time, and then all these other things happened along the way. Like doing stationery and books, and the weird thing is that I've sort of come full circle, and now I'm designing fabric for the quilting industry, where really didn't start out there. I had a point I was going to make, and I forgot what it was.
Well, it's interesting. You put this energy out, and you had these different strands of skills, and it seems like a lot of things came to you, and I'm just wondering, for example, Takashimaya, the Japanese department store, used to give you antique kimonos, and you would cut those apart and make quilts. Now, how does something like that happen to you? And it seems to fit so perfectly with the kind of impulse you're talking about, the thing that made you want to create.
Yeah, well, it was from doing this one trade show. So when I started exhibiting there, what was interesting to me was, everybody had cool shoes, number one. It was like a crowd that I wanted to hang out with. And there were some really interesting things happening in furniture and floor coverings, but nobody was doing anything in bedding. And if you walk that show now, there are a lot of companies that have come along, Dwell Bedding and all these other companies. But at the time that I started, nobody was even thinking about bedding. And how clearly was I thinking about it or not, I don't know, but it seemed like it really fit in, but I also really stood out because nobody else was doing anything like that. The quilts were very colorful, so they made a big impact. And the show was one that, got a lot of press coverage in the design press, so like Shelter magazines and design magazines. And that got me out in front of people very slowly, but, I think the first year that I exhibited there, I had the New York Times shot a story called Household Names, and it ran in their home design supplement the following October, and I had a full page. That doesn't really you know, happen. And it's not like it makes you wealthy overnight, but it, you know, that sort of accumulates and builds over time. And the show led to just about everything that I ever did. The stationery show happened at the same time, so I had a Chronicle Books asked me to do stationery and then a book, and Takashimaya was one of the first customers that I had, and I didn't even know anything about the store at the time. And they gave me, you know, these vintage kimono. It was terrifying to have to cut them up, and then, and I'm like, what do you want me to do? And they're like, anything you want, which was very scary. And the good thing is, I didn't have a lot of time, and they were all hand quilted. So I would get the kimono in July. They wanted them in store for holiday, and there's not a lot of time to second guess, which I'm very good at. So, and there were strong parameters, which I like as a designer. I like solving problems. The fabric made in for kimonos is only this wide, and it had to be foundation pieced. So, you know, there were clear parameters, you know, like that I had to kind of design within, and I liked that challenge a lot. And they're mostly monochromatic, and it's a huge body of work that most people have never seen that I do. I think I made probably at least 50 quilts for them over the years.
Would you talk a little bit about your studio setup now, what you're set up to do, what your studio looks like? I've been to it, and it's a wonderful workspace, but it's very interesting to see the mix of technology. You have all your computers and everything, and you have a 20-year-old Brother sewing machine that just goes, you know, back and forth. So just talk a little bit about the setup and how you work there.
Well, it's, I think, having grown up in central Massachusetts, which, you know, is an old, you know, there's a lot of textile manufacturing and manufacturing in general, and like so many of those cities where I am now, Bridgeport, Connecticut, was an old manufacturing city that kind of fell on hard times. So I've always been drawn to these places that have these empty buildings. It feels like there's so much possibility there, whether it's true or not. So my studio is in this old, it's a factory building, and they used to make lace trims there. It was called American Fabrics. So it seems appropriate that our space is there. And we have, you know, it's great light, really high ceilings, and there's a great group of other artists and designers in the building, which makes it really nice. And having been a graphic designer, you know, I learned graphic design at the time when the Apple computer was becoming integral to that, and so I was very well versed in the software, the graphic, you know, like Illustrator and stuff. So I still use that for designing my quilts and drawing my fabric. And so, of course, I have computers. But other than that, you know, I have a really old Brother Industrial, and I like things to be simple. I don't, especially as a quilter, it's embarrassing, but I never really, I'm pretty much self-taught. I always, you know, had some books that I might have looked at the pictures, but I never really read, and you know, I shouldn't admit that out loud, but it's true. And so I'm sure that I don't, you know, maybe like in my own books I tell how to do things in the most roundabout or laborious way, but it's just, you know, that's how I do it, or how I learned, or, you know, as like from whatever angle I'm coming at it.
So you do teach a lot of improvisational workshops, so it's the improvisational quilting, but you're talking about these designs that you do on your computer, and that is not improvisational. That is coming up with a design, and then where does your inspiration come from? How does that process, and what, I don't know, I guess I'm also interested in the mix, you know, I mean, you're doing things that are for exhibition, you're doing things that are, for a while you're doing like Pottery Barn, right? So these are things that are going to be reproduced. Where do these design influences come, and how does the process go?
Well, I think, you know, I look at a lot of different things. I look at painting, I look at fashion, I look at design, you know, magazines or books or just about anything, but always the historical quilts also are a huge part of the influence on what I do, and whether it's, you know, it always starts with an idea and a sketch, whether I'm, you know, the fabric obviously is in coming from feed sack type prints and stuff like that. So I'm always kind of looking at historical stuff as a starting place, and then, you know, just hopefully bringing my own kind of imprint to it. What was the question?
Well, sort of about the process, but now one of your fabrics, Flea Market Fancy, which was very popular. Are you still
a
flea market girl?
I saw somebody was wearing a skirt.
Is to flea markets that still a source for? Do you go buy quilts or do you look for
Yeah, usually quilts or, you know, it can be anything. It can be printed ephemera. It can be, you know, clothing or, but often quilts. I love looking at. I just love going to the flea markets or, you know, it's just. I guess it's always that feeling of like, oh. Like you've discovered something, even though obviously you haven't. You know, it's there for everybody to see, and it's something. I guess, and I love this nostalgia of a lot of that stuff from another era, and the flea market just, you know, has like a lot of. And I've always been interested in mixing things. You know, all one note isn't that interesting to me, but. The right mixture, and it's a very particular balance, I think, of things. It's you know, and everybody has their own unique expression, and it's just a matter of finding. You know, I try to find the right balance that's right for me, and you know, fortunately, people respond to that. But I think, you know, we all have our own voice that we can sort of figure out how to express that, whatever it is we're interested in.
One of the things that was interesting to me, and I had interviewed you before for the Wall Street Journal, is this, I thought you'd be very modern, and like I said, with your technology. And interesting to me is that you do these great designs, and a lot of your pieces, you do machine piece them, but then you send them out to be hand quilted. That really surprised me, number one. And number two, they're very simple patterns. A lot of quilts today, it's elaborate. It's machine quilting, and it's the more stitches, the better. It's like, how many miles of stitches and thread are in your quilt? But tell me a little bit about that. Does that surprise people? And what is that part of this sort of the homemadeness and the...
Yeah, it's also an aesthetic that, you know, to me, I kind of, especially on the machine quilted stuff, I've stuck with this figure eight because it's, it's even, so it's an even texture, and it's not sort of hard angles, and, you know, I work with somebody who does my long arm quilting, and I'm not interested in patterns that are telling a different story other than what the quilt is, you know, like, kitties and, you know, moon, stars, like, it's just not my thing, and it doesn't mean it's right or wrong, it just, it's not my aesthetic, and, yeah, there's a, you know, it's just a matter of, and I think because I started out not in the quilt world, because I was making quilts for a different audience, I didn't have... You know, I didn't feel like I had to behave do things like a certain way. And thank God for that because, you know, like however many years later, you know, it's what I do and I feel like, well, you know, I've gotten this far already, like making my living doing it, so it must be okay.
Now, with all the business side of things that you're doing, do you ever have a chance to just say, I'm going to make this quilt for the pure pleasure of it or for another person, or is it just so much now your business that you're...
Yeah. I don't have that much free time, and I think it's like anybody who does a particular thing, the carpenter, you know, has all the unfinished construction jobs at home, or I just, you know, I think the last thing I want to do is get behind a sewing machine when I have free time. one of the last projects that I kind of made start to finish was one of the quilts in my book. And Christina, making a book is a very labor-intensive.
And let's say, give the project. Title of your current book.
Modern Quilts, Traditional Inspiration. So in this book, and all the quilts that are on display there are from the book. And it was my chance to kind of pay homage to all those historical quilts that inspired me in the first place. But one of the quilts in the book is a little doll quilt, and it's a hand-pieced it and hand-quilted it, and I got to watch movies while I did it and enjoyed every second of it. It was really nice. And I knit occasionally, but lately I'm just trying to do less. I'm trying to do less. Because it's really easy in today's world, everybody's on devices and communicating all the time, and I'm finding it exhausting these days, so I'm just trying to learn how to get back to something that feels simpler.
That's great. Talking a little bit about aesthetics and all of that, what do you think, impossible question alert, makes a great quilt?
Oh. If it's something that everybody's going to respond to different things and have different ideas about what a great quilt is. For me, it's one that makes me kind of stop and pay attention. And it can be, I love everything from, a quilt at the flea market that's just got 800 million prints in it and tiny little patches, to something, that's really simple, or like a whole cloth quilt. And so it really, I don't know, that those kind of absolute questions are kind of hard for me. But something that feels, that is authentic in and of itself, it has like an honesty. Whether it's a quilt or anything else, there's something, there's a quality to it that it's not trying to be anything bigger or less. It just, it has this particular quality that to me feels like it's authentic in itself, and that's something that I respond to.
As far as things, you said, and other things, other kinds of artworks, are there particular artists who work in textiles or in any medium that you feel have influenced you, that you really respond to and or they influenced you?
There are a lot of artists that I look at. I love Louise Bourgeois and Agnes Martin and, painters like that. And there are... Oh, I'm having... I knew this was going to happen. I was going to make a cheat sheet. There are people here in this audience, like Heather and Luke Haynes, whose work I think is really amazing. And, again, sort of true. They're doing work that's true to themselves, which is always beautiful no matter what form it takes.
Now, you have been... called sort of a godmother of modern quilting, and you are looked upon as somebody who has helped kind of birth this movement and the sensibility, the aesthetic in this movement. And you are, in fact, the keynote speaker for the Modern Quilt Guild's first quilt convention, the Quilt Con, which is going to be in Austin, Texas in February. How do you feel about that? Modern quilting, what does that mean? Do you feel like you are... That this movement sprang from you in some way? How does that feel?
No, I mean, I think like anything else, everybody in retrospect always tries to kind of explain it. And it's funny these days, it happens so fast that, we're kind of finding the origins of things like in real time, which is kind of odd. And I think... it's flattering. I try not to take it too seriously, because I think I was in a place and a time, and I was always presenting my work you know, I was doing, you know, it's great. On one hand, I think, oh, okay, I kind of got my message out there, and, you know, it took a long time, but, you know, people noticed, and that's really gratifying. And on the other hand, you know, nothing is ever one person. It's a kind of confluence of events and things that happen. And, you know, when I started out, I used the word modern because I was talking to an audience that, you know, didn't have any other kind of reference point. And in some ways, you know, was that the right word? I'm not really sure. And I've never been very good at absolutes. I kind of recoil from them because to me nothing is all one thing or another, and, you know, however it gets defined, you know, that I'll leave that to someone else to do the defining.
Just a couple of things here. Why is quilt making important to your life?
I think it gave me an opportunity to build a life, and, you know, earn a living doing something that was uniquely my own, or, you know, like, I was able to do work that is my designs, and that, you know, that's an amazing opportunity to be able to have spent the last 16 years, you know, doing my own work, and where it'll go, you know, I don't really know, but
what do you think is the importance of quilts in American life today?
Well, I
you're
think
allowed to
always...
have some water.
Thank you.
Let's give the girl a break here.
Well, quilts. I think what's great about quilts is they're a beautiful design object, but they're also a useful object. You know, all the things that they represent, warmth and family and sharing and community, in you know, to have that sort of embedded in a functional object is pretty spectacular. And I love what is the quilting community and how generous and responsive everybody is. You know, it's just, I mean, if you look, you know, like, I'm sure you all have friends that you quilt with or sew with, or, and, you know, today online that there's another kind of community, I think is really amazing. And I'm just grateful to be a part of it.
Looking ahead, you said, who knows where it will lead, but do you have some next challenges in mind or some next things that you are that important
well,
to you
Well, I'd like to
accomplish?
Start, get back to making quilts, and I'm going to have a show at the National Quilt Museum in Paducah in October 2013, so they want 16 pieces, so I'll be working on some quilts this year, which is really great.
That's wonderful. And you'll continue to design fabric?
And I'm going to continue to design fabric.
In your simpler life?
In my simpler life.
That you have in mind here. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you would like to the world to know, that you would like to have on your in the Library of Congress about you?
No.
Okay, I want to thank you so much, Denise Schmidt, for doing this and for being willing to do it publicly, because usually that's not how we do these. We're ending up this QSOS interview at FIT at the Quilters Take Manhattan event at 2:22 p.m. I have no idea if that's correct.